join in the fun. Now the show has begun.
Here's Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with June Whitfield, Wallace Eaton, and the Keynotes, all inviting you to...
Well, listeners, it seems that as far as entertainment is concerned, the boardroom is taking the place of the boudoir. And when you think of the cut and thrust of commercial competition, the drama of clashes between management and labour, the stark, relentless... Oh, dash it all, chaps, let's have a go.
Everybody in the grimy north country town of Forbridge works in the great local steel foundry Starkers & Co. Now that old Sir John Starkers is dead, the firm has passed into the hands of his son, Gordon Starkers. And while the factory eagerly awaits the arrival of their new boss, work goes on in number one blast furnace. It is the crucial moment when the steel is ready for pouring. On a massive gantry, 50 foot from the stone floor, 200 tons of white-hot, bubbling, molten steel waits to be poured. The foreman turns to his men.
All right, lads, who's going to be mother? Now, come on, chaps. Who's going to have a go at pouring this time?
Well, I'd like to have a go, Sam.
Right, old Clutterbuck, put your tanner in the kitty.
Right.
Now then, I'll explain to you what happens. Here's what happens. Now, you see how we've all got our tea mugs on the floor below cauldron?
Aye.
Well, up there is Jonathan controlling cauldron tipper. Now, the object of the game is to guide the tipping of the cauldron so that a tiny dollop of molten steel falls into your own mug and no one else's. You all right?
Right.
Right, we'll have a go then. Go on then.
Right. Left a bit, Jonathan.
Right.
Back a bit now.
Right.
A little more.
Right.
A little more. Right. Now, let it go.
Clutterbuck.
Yes, Sam?
You bungled it, didn't you?
Yes, Sam.
You let the old lot come down.
I'm sorry, Sam. I forgot to say when.
Oh, sorry. 200 tons of molten steel. Look at it. You realise you've ruined the carpet.
I'm sorry, Sam.
I'm sorry, Sam. 200 tons of it. Took us 3 months to get that lot heated up to pouring point. As foreman of this job, I must take the gravest possible course.
What do you mean, Sam?
Clutterbuck, you lose your tanner.
Here, Dad, oh, quick.
It's my daughter. What is it, Elsie?
Here, get men working. New boss is on his way over.
Eh?
You know, young Mr. Starker's dad. Ooh, he's a terror. Cold, hard, and ruthlessly efficient.
Oh, by heck. Isaac, get them chestnuts out of the blast furnace.
Oh, but Sam, they've only done one side. I can't. Look.
They'll have to be sacrificed.
Oh.
Now, come on, the rest of you, dash about a bit. Look as if you're doing something.
Doing what, Sam?
I don't know. It's a bit of something with an hammer.
Oh, right.
Step lively there.
Look out, Dad, here he comes.
Oh. All right, all right. All right there, stand by your machines. Now, you don't know me, but you'd better start getting used to me. I'm Starkers. Yes, now, quiet, please. I'm not at all happy about the production figures here. You, what are you doing?
I'm lathing.
Well, you're paid to work, not to lathe. And you, the one with the dressing gown and armchair, who are you?
I'm the foreman, sir.
Oh, Cleckheaton.
Cleckheaton.
Oh, yes, yes, my father warned me about you. You've been here for 40 years, and you've been a troublemaker ever since you started.
Nay, I started lower than that. I were a troublemaker's bottom knocker. May I say, sir, how distressed all the lads felt about old Sir John's sad passing.
Oh, that's very kind. That's very kind. But it will not deter me from finding out exactly which of them persuaded him to put his head under the steam hammer to watch it coming down.
Ah, no one will ever know that, sir. I hope. Yes.
However, you're not dealing with my father now. My father, grand old man that he was, ran this factory on old-fashioned lines. He knew nothing about production efficiency.
He didn't know much about steam hammers neither, did he?
Now, I'm going to institute new methods. Oh. Henceforth, production will be stepped up by means of labour and management council.
Very good.
Three members from management, three from workers.
Oh, that's good.
The first Labour Management Council meeting will be tomorrow morning.
Hooray!
At 8:30 a.m.
8:30? 8:30?
What's wrong with that?
Well, management may be there, but I wouldn't count on Labour. By gum, I don't finish coughing till 10:30.
You will be there, or else.
All right, else can go.
You'll all be there. And don't forget, the meeting is at 8:30.
All right. The meeting will get nowhere if we talk all at once. Only one of us must talk all at once. Me. Now then, Mr. Starker, the men won't stand for those wage cuts.
But the firm is losing £124,000 a week. What other way can I save £124,000 a week?
You could give up smoking.
Why must I make all the sacrifices?
Wow.
Now, has anybody else got any suggestions?
Aye, I've now got something to say.
Well, if it's constructive...
It's constructive. It's about the firm's annual outing. Do you realise that when you put the bottled beer on the roof of the sharabang, it gets shook up, somewhat rotten?
Oh, bell top cutter.
I won't be silenced. Them gas bubbles have a definite effect. All the way home, I was in an agony of embarrassment.
Clutterbuck belt up. Mr. Starkers,
yes.
I am sure the workers will help you in your difficulties in any way short of actually putting themselves to any trouble. Now, what have you in mind?
Complete reorganization.
We
cease manufacturing ferrule flanges for shooting sticks. We retool to manufacturing something else completely.
Have you gone mad? Have you taken leave, Mr. Starkers? Ferrule flanges are an essential commodity. They're what prevents the pointed end of a shooting stick from going any further into the ground.
I know that,
You
but...
take away the ferrule flanges from your shooting sticks, and what'll happen next year at Ascot Gold Cup? We'll have the flower of our aristocracy sinking slowly into a squatting position.
And what's more, it's bad for the digestion.
What is?
Putting the bottles on the top of the...
Oh, bell, cut a book! Mr. Starkers, now what do you suggest we manufacture instead of ferrule flanges?
Suspension bridges.
Suspension bridges.
What do you say? What do you say, Clecky? Now, are you with me? Shall we go all out?
We certainly shall. All right, lads, all out.
All out.
Clecky, why are you gathering up your lunchbox?
Because I'm a craftsman. Suspension bridges. You'll not get me on that luxury trade. Let me get to that window. All right, lads, down tools. What's that? Well, pick some up and then down them.
No, Dad, you're it wrong this time.
Oh, Elsie.
Progress is a thing that can't be altered.
You could halt the shadow, though. Give the bubbles time to settle.
Oh, belt up, Clutterbuck. Very well.
Book.
I'm terribly sorry. Very well, Clecky.
Aye.
If that's your attitude, you're fired.
Fired? After all, my service is here.
I'm sorry?
But what'll I do? I've been a foreman for 40 years. I can't start to work at my age.
Well, there's no room for sentiment in business. The job must be put in hand immediately. That's the first thing you must learn about suspension bridges. You just can't keep them hanging about.
The contract called for suspension bridge to be finished in 6 weeks. But without Dad, we ran into trouble. 5 weeks later, we still hadn't got the crucible of steel to right consistency.
I've tried everything, Mr. Starkers, but it still keeps coming lumpy.
Oh, look here, it's got to be right. Unless the liquid steel is right, it just won't set. Now, what can we do?
Well, we're puddings. I add white of an egg. What have you got in there?
I got pig iron, I got limestone, I got oxide, I got manganese. Now, what else is there, Clutterbuck?
Carbon, sulfide, and Tommy.
Tommy?
He leaned a bit too far.
As if we didn't have enough troubles, now we've got Tommy Steele. Oh, dear. Miss Clare Keaton, we've got to admit defeat.
Ah, so you can't get along without old Sam Clickeaton after all.
Dad!
Ah, it's Dad.
Oh, you've come back.
I couldn't stay away. You see, I realised something. In modern industry, the old craftsmanship and the new techniques must blend. You and me, Mr. Starkers, we must march forward together and in hand.
Like in old-time dancing?
I was talking metamorphically, you young Jesse.
Oh.
Now, let me see what a muck you made of this mixture. Ah, as I thought, you didn't grease the tin. Oh. Stand aside, Sam Clateaton's back on job.
And so, on the appointed day, Starker's suspension bridge were officially opened. And as a gesture of reconciliation, Mr. Stark has asked Dad to perform the opening ceremony.
Here comes Sam! Come on, Sam! Get on,
Dad!
Please!
And furthermore, fellow workers, this bridge is more than a bridge. It's a symbolum. A symbolum of what can be achieved by cooperation between works and management.
Here.
With... Thank you, Elsie. With which thought, I take this champagne bottle...
Careful now, don't shake up the bubbles.
Will you stop thy clatter-clutter book? I take this champagne bottle and smash it against bridge in token of a happy future. The bottle, please. Here goes.
Oh, well... Anyone for feral flanges?
I suddenly found myself buying flowers. I suddenly found myself sighing for hours. I suddenly found myself laughing at showers. Love, what have you done to me, to me, to me, to me, to me?
I suddenly seemed to hear a bluebird singing. And suddenly on the street bluebells were springing. I suddenly found my feet go high and flinging. Love, what have you done to me?
There was a time when the dime was just a dime.
Meeting you has changed my
nickel is worth a dime and every dime a buck. I suddenly realized you weren't pretending. I wasn't a bit surprised our hearts were blending. I suddenly knew there'd be a happy ending. Love, what have you done to me?
Love is the sweetest thing of all.
Love is the sweetest thing of all.
I suddenly found my feet go high and clinging. Love, what have you done to me? There was a time when a dime was just a dime.
Meeting you has changed my life.
Now it seems to me that every nickel is worth a dime and every dime a buck. I suddenly realized you weren't pretending. I wasn't a bit surprised our hearts were blending. I suddenly knew there'd be a happy ending. Love, what have you done to me?
You've lost all this, please. Time, gentlemen, please.
Oh, dear.
Here, Mr. Glump.
Hey.
Saw your boy, Ron, yesterday.
How are you?
Hardly recognised him. Smart brown suit, new shoes. Where'd he get them? How much did it cost you? Where'd you get the money, eh?
Oh, lummy, Ted, you ask more questions than the Spanish Inquisition. As per chance would have it, that suit did not cost us a penny.
No.
We got the whole outfit for nothing.
For nothing?
Absolutely au gratin. You see, Ron had to have a new outfit because, well, because last Friday he had to go for an interview for a job.
You mean a job of work?
Now, don't sound so incredulous, Ted.
I say, last Friday he had to have an interview for a job. And you should have been round our place on last Thursday afternoon. Oh. His Eth, she was so het up about this impending interview, she was... Well, you know Eth by now.
Just got to pass that interview tomorrow. Oh, I've been over and over the questions they might ask you. Now, are you sure you've got the answers completely memorised?
No, eh?
Oh, Ron, it's essential you do remember. Oh, but what worries me even more than how you'll answer is, well, to be quite frank, your get-up.
Oh, you don't have to worry about that, Eth. I'll have the alarm clock.
No, your clothes, Ron.
Yes?
They do put an awful lot of store by appearances.
What's wrong with my appearances, Eth?
Well, beloved, well, to start with, that shirt.
That was a Christmas present, Eth. It's one of the new sort. You don't have to iron it.
But, beloved, that doesn't mean you don't have to wash it.
Oh, well, it doesn't matter. I've got another shirt.
Oh, where is it, Ron?
Underneath this one.
You mean, sweetheart, that you wear both your shirts on you at the same time?
I have to, Eth. Dad pawned my chest of drawers. You see.
Oh, no, I know it's not easy for you, Ron.
No.
But, well, somehow you've just got to smarten up before this interview. Oh, I don't mean be flash. I mean, just, well, suitable. I mean, those shoes you've got on.
They're all right, Eth. The Sunday paper said brown and white shoes are very smart for summer.
Not one brown, one white, sweetheart.
Oh, blow.
Well, haven't you got any other shoes?
Well, the only other pair I've got are exactly like these.
Oh, Ron. Oh, it's no use. What your father must do is buy you a complete new outfit for the interview. Oh, do you think he'd do it? Be about £20?
Well, Eth, Dad knows how important this interview is to me, and where my future is concerned, Dad would gladly spend his last... How much?
£20.
No, he won't.
Then you must make him, Ron. Oh, Ron, sometimes I think you're just too placid about everything. This is one time when I wish you'd have a little go.
All right, Eth. Yeah.
Just a kiss, Eth.
No, Ron, yes, no, not in those shoes.
Why? They don't make any difference, the shoes.
It makes it seem common.
Oh, how can it? Kiss me back.
Hello, hello, hello. Go it, Ron. Snogger in the morning, snogger in the evening, snogger at dinner time. I won't interrupt, I just come in for the fly swatter. Oh, here we are. Oh, dear, one day we'll have to get a proper tea strainer.
Oh, no, no, Mr. Glum, don't go.
Hey, what's that? Don't go.
Well, it's about Ron's interview on Friday.
Yes, what do you think of that, eh, Eth? They called him a layabout, but I knew, Eth.
And so did I.
Oh, did you? I knew he was just waiting till the right opportunity presented itself. You weren't born yesterday, were you, Ron?
No, Dad. Yesterday I went to the pictures.
Oh, there's executive material for you. Ron will pass his interview, Eth. He'll pass because you know why? Because this is a challenge. And that's what Ron rises to, isn't it, Ron?
Yes.
Likes a challenge, don't you, boy?
I rise to that.
Yes. Most of the time his talents are there, but they're lying doormat, you see.
Yes.
Comes a challenger and
rise to that, yes.
Yes, his true worth rises resplendently up to the surface like a... Well, like a corn plaster when you're having a bath.
So, of
course. No hope about it, is there, Ron?
No, Dad, no hope at all.
I know it, you see. I know it because that's how I am, you know, with the challenge, you know. And he's very like me, is my Ron.
You know why he's so like me?
Yes, Mr. Glum, because he's wearing your old clothes.
I beg your very ladylike pardon, Miss Ethel.
Well,
there's no need to take that derogatory tone about those clothes. If they were good enough for my father, they're good enough for him.
Oh, Mr. Glum, please don't take offence.
I've taken it.
Well, yes, but all I'm saying is, those clothes Rom's wearing are going to spoil his chances on Friday. Oh, just look at them.
All right, look at them. Well, what's the matter with them? Oh, I admit there's a few egg stains on his lapel, all right. There's a drop of soup on his tie. Come to that, his pullover ain't exactly lacking in calories either. He may not be smart, but he's nourishing.
Well, I'll tell you quite frankly, Mr. Glum.
Coming out frank, is it?
Yes, it is. If he goes for a job in those clothes, he does not stand one earthly.
Oh, come now, Eth. All that's happened is that what Liberace does with sequins, Ron does with gravy.
Mr. Glum, believe me, I know more about employers than any of the Glum family because I've actually had employment.
Thank you for that.
Well, you've just got to buy Ron a new outfit.
Oh, I see. I'm presented with an old tomato, eh?
Yes.
All right, then. All right, we will redecorate him. I think there's still 30 bob left of Mrs. Glum's burial money.
30 bob?
30 bob.
Mr. Glum, to dress Ron really befitting, you'll have to spend at least £20.
£20?
Yes.
£20? Well, it's out of the question. I won't entertain you. I haven't got it. That's it. That's finished.
Mr. Glum.
It's gone.
You always say you're the sort who rises to a challenge.
Well?
Well, here is a challenge. Go on, rise.
Well, Ted, as you can see, there was a right poser of a problem, eh?
Yeah.
How to get Ron 20 quid's worth of gents natty without having the requisite wherewithal to pay for it thereof.
Yeah, it's a real head-scratcher, ain't it? I'd say it was impossible.
Oh, you would you, Ted? Yeah. Well, that, Ted, is exactly why you are a mere boozer employee, while I am, well...
unemployed?
A valued customer. I suddenly saw the solution of our problem over the dinner table. I was reading my end of the tablecloth, and I see this paragraph.
Yeah.
I see it. It's a case about a woman who bought a fur coat, and after wearing it sometime, she found out she got a rash.
Oh.
They didn't say where,
no.
But she got this rash. So she sued the shop and they paid up 250 quid. Oh. Well, of course, immediately my agile mind flashes to Ron's drip-dry shirt.
What he was bought for Christmas.
That's right, from Loveday Brothers on the parade. Without further ado, I call in Eth and Ron and I give them a briefing.
Ah.
So, next morning, there they both are at the shirt counter of Mrs. Loveday Brothers on the parade.
Nervous about this? Well, I'd never do it if it wasn't your future's at stake. Oh, and don't keep touching your face, beloved. Those spots will rub off. Oh, dear, where's the assistant?
Yes, where's the blasted, perishing, blooming assistant?
How dare you use language?
It's all right, Eth. It says so on the counter, see? Modern men swear. Yes, I said.
Oh, careful now, Ron. Here comes the man.
Oh, good morning. Can I be of assistance?
Are you Mr. Loveday?
Yes.
Well, I have a complaint.
Now, Eth, I've got the complaint. It's a spot on my face. Yes, no, don't you remember Dad explaining it all while he was putting it on?
Ron!
What?
Ron!
Hello?
Mr. Glum said to leave me to do the talking.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Loveday?
Oh, yes,
well,
yes.
I wish to complain that this drip-dry shirt purchased from your establishment at Christmas has bought my fiancé's face out.
Oh, I'm afraid that's quite impossible. Whatever caused those curious marks on his face, I am positive it is not one of our shirts.
Well,
I am sorry, madam. We cannot accept any liability at all.
Oh, excuse me, my good man, if I appear to be butting in, but I couldn't help overhearing this conversation here.
Oh.
I wondered if I can help.
And who are you?
Oh, I'm a highly respected Harley Street medical skin specialist. Perhaps I can be an impartial adjudicator in this bull and car here.
Oh, yes, please, Dad.
Dad?
Dad.
Oh, dear. He recognised me. It's the penalty of fame, you know. Oh, yes. Dr. Eustace Dad. Yes, sir. Oh, sir. I'm often in the paper for my miraculous diagnostics, sir. Now then, it's a case of this boy's face, isn't it? May I see this lad's face a mo? Oh, yes. Ghastly, yes. Tell me, lad, have you at any time... This is a chance in a million, of course. Have you at any time happened to wear a drip-dry shirt next to your skin?
No.
Hey!
It was next to me pull over.
I mean reading from outside in.
Oh, yes, the one I had for Christmas.
Well, there you are. Yeah. That's it, then. We're gazing at a chronic case of drip-dry mitis. Nasty big spots there. Very classical example. I shall probably write it up for my next article in the Lancelot.
Now, just a minute, Doctor. This can't be. Well, we've sold hundreds and hundreds of these shirts.
Are you doubting my professional velocity? Well, let me tell you, my good man, although I am a skin specialist, I am not given to rash statements.
And I am not given to being easily hoodwinked. If you want my opinion of those spots, they look very much to me like dabs of nail varnish.
What an appalling incineration! I will swear in any witness books in the land that they're not nail varnish.
Nah, they're red ink.
No! Yeah. Make it worse. Oh, look, sir, we don't want to cause any trouble.
Nana, on the contrary, my dear young lady. As a doctor, I can't allow this paltry shop owner here to hush up a severe attack of illness. It would be contrary to my hypocritical oath. I suggest that Mrs. Loveday pay the lad £250 in lieu of compensation.
200? Quite out of the question.
Well, in that case, we'll settle for that brown suit hanging there, that pair of shoes, pullover, that tie on the hook, and what else? Now?
I know, Dad, a drip-dry shirt. Oh, they're very good, eh? Yes. Oh.
Look, miss, will you tell your spotty friend to close his yap? Well, now, Mr. Loveday.
You know that this is nothing more or less than blackmail.
Well, of course, if you're prepared to take it to legislature, of course, it's up to you. Make nice reading in the local papers, wouldn't it? Local outfitter starts plague.
Oh.
Make nice reading.
Very well, take the blasted things. Take this and go on and that. Take them all. Take them all and get out. Just get out of my shop and stay out.
We done it. Good old Dr. Glum, eh? We done it. Look at that armful of lovely new clothes.
Yes, but... Oh, well, I suppose the end justifies the means. Oh, Ron, you'd better go home and change into them quickly if your interview's at 10.
Righto, eh? But it seems a pity to go all the way home just to come back to the parade again.
What do you mean, back to the parade? You mean your interview is with somebody round here?
Oh, yeah. Let me look at the card. Sharp assistant wanted at Big Gents Outfitters, Mrs. Loveday.
Oh, no! Yeah. Oh, Lord, Loveday!
Harry Rabinowitz and the BBC Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Dick Bentley, Professor Jimmy Edwards and June Whitfield, encouraged by Wallace Eaton and the Keynotes. Frank Muir and Dennis Norden read the script, and the program was produced by Charles Maxwell. We all invite you to tune in again next week and...